Hello and welcome to the podcast for Christ Community Church in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. This is the message given on Sunday, January 20th, 2013 by Tom Job from John chapter 13.
The Gospel of John, chapter 13. We were with some folks the other night that they said that they, for a while, they were going to a church that whenever they read God's word, everybody would stand. So, why don't you just stand up? The Gospel of John, chapter 13. It was just before the Passover feast. Jesus, knowing that the time had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The evening meal was being served, and the devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, to betray Jesus. Jesus, knowing that the Father had put all things under his power, that he had come from God and was returning to God, got up from the meal, took off his clothing, wrapped a towel around his waist, and after pouring water into a basin, began to wash the disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. And he came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" And Jesus replied, "You don't realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand." "No," Peter said, "you will never wash my feet." And Jesus answered, unless I wash your feet, you have no part with me." "Then, Lord," Simon Peter replied, "not just my feet, but my head and my hands as well." And Jesus answered, "A person who has had a bath needs only to wash his feet. His whole body is clean, and you're clean. But not every one of you," for he knew who was going to betray him. And that was why he said, "Not everybody is clean." And when he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and he returned to his place. "Do you understand what I've done for you?" He asked them, "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, because that's what I am. And that if I, your teacher and Lord, have washed your feet, you should wash one another's feet. I have given you an example that you should do as I have done for you. I tell you the truth, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you're blessed if you do them." You can sit down. Wow, we just finished a whole bunch of weeks in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. And I always try to think, if I get some more chances to share God's word with you, what should I do next? And I always think about it a whole lot. And I always want to try to do something. Usually I don't ever want to talk about anything that doesn't mean anything to me. And that I don't really know what I'm talking about. Usually it's just scriptures that have been meaning a lot to me lately and just my life, because I'm, have enough problems and that I just like, "Help me with this." And then I just share it with you. I remember who was it? Well, maybe I shouldn't say, but it was what Pastor, and I saw that he was going to give a message on the 10 characteristics of a godly woman. And I'm like, "Really, dude, you're going to do that?" But so I always try to talk about scriptures that do mean a lot to me personally, although Leah's pointed out that one thing that I do that I didn't realize quite as much is that I do quote movies that I've never seen before. And I do that one day. I did it 3 times. I remember one time at this Young Life camp, and I quoted this awesome quote from the movie The Silence of the Lambs. "Really? Officer Starling, am I evil?" And I've never seen that movie and never will, but I understand that it might be about somebody that eats people, so probably not going to happen. But probably the worst time I ever did, but it was also my best, was quoting from the movie Henry V, which is a movie based on the play of William Shakespeare, Henry V, which I've never read because I've never read a play of William Shakespeare. And I'm, in 2013, I'm going to. It's just in my bucket list. But this was a speech that I think I stole it out of a book or something. And I cried, I think, and I hadn't even seen the movie, but it's about the British were going to fight the French, and Henry V was giving them a speech before the battle, and they were going to fight on the feast of St. Crispian. It was St. Crispian's Day, and here it comes. He said, "This day is called the Feast of Crispian. And he that shall live this day and see old age will yearly on the vigil feast his neighbors and say, tomorrow is St. Crispian. And then he will strip his sleeve and show his scar and say, these wounds I got on Crispian's day. And Crispian shall ne'er go by from this day to the end of the world, that we in it shall be remembered. We few, we happy few, we band of brothers. And gentlemen in England now abed shall think themselves accursed they were not here while any speaks that fought with us upon St. Crispian's day. That was awesome. I thought that was so awesome. I just love a speech that somebody gives like right before they go into battle, like when Aragorn said, sons of Gondor, the day will come when the strength of men will fail, but it will not be this day. God. And then he rears that horse up at the end. And I'm like, how did he do? Was that CGI or did he really do that on that horse? And, William Wallace, if you run, you will live for a while. And then dying on your beds many years from now, you will be willing to trade all the days for this. And for one chance to come back here and tell your enemies that they can take our lives, but they cannot take our freedom. Oh, man. On May 13th, 1940, his first speech as the incoming prime minister, William Churchill said, you know, it's the part where he promises all the things that he will offer as prime minister. And he says, I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat. He says, we have before us many, many long months of struggle and of suffering. And you ask, what is our policy? And I will say, it is to wage war by sea and land and air with all of our might and all of the strength that God can give us. This is our policy. And you ask, what is our aim? And I answer one word, victory. Victory at all cost, victory in spite of all terror, victory however long and hard the road may be. And I just love that when a person, right before they send people into battle, Winston Churchill in December 13th, 1931, was in New York City, and he was crossing Fifth Avenue, and he looked that way for oncoming traffic, because in his country, that's where it comes from, and he stepped in front of a car, and a guy hit him and broke two of his ribs, and you just think, what if he had run him over? The world would be a different place without Winston Churchill and without a man who, he really didn't do anything but give speeches and encourage people to be brave and to fight. And that's why I want, like, from now to, like, if the Lord wills, from now till Easter time, there's a section of scripture that I really, really love. It's John 13 through 17. And it's when Jesus was meeting with his guys, and they'd spent a lot of time together, but he was about to send them into battle. And it was their last time together as they would know it. And it was the last things that he wanted to tell them. And it's kind of like the secrets that you need to know before you're sent on the mission that God sends you on. I love it so much. I love the Gospel of John anyway. All the Gospels are so amazing in their own way. The Gospel of Matthew was really written to Jewish people to prove to them that Jesus was the Messiah. There's 139 quotations or citations from the Old Testament in the Gospel of Matthew. And the Gospel of Luke is unique. He said, I'm giving you a historical investigative account. Like, I did my historical homework and I'm giving an account of Jesus in a historically accurate way. And he also wrote the book of Acts, which was kind of like the Gospel of Luke, volume 2. And this is telling you, okay, now I want to tell you how Jesus began to change history. And the Gospel of Mark was written to slaves, predominantly slaves, in the city of Rome. And it presents Jesus as a slave himself, as the servant of all servants. The Gospel of Mark, it happened, it's all about what Jesus did. There's a word there's the word immediately, like Jesus did this and immediately he did that. And I think it's found 41 times in the Gospel of Mark. But the Gospel of John is also so amazing in so many ways, because when you think about it, like, why did he write it? And one thing I do feel about it is I feel that John wrote it because he was there. And he said, I want to tell you what you get. Like he says in chapter 20, verse 28, he said, a lot of other things Jesus did that aren't written in this book, but these are written so that you might know that Jesus is the Christ, and in believing him, you might have life. That's what you get. You get life. I want to think of all the ways that I can tell you what that is, like what life is. And, you know, it was the Gospel of John. It comes before all of the things that the Apostle Paul wrote in the New Testament, but he actually wrote it after. He wrote it like 25 years after the Apostle Paul was dead. And Paul, he was so amazing, and he's the one who tells us that just by faith in Jesus, you're saved by grace, and just by believing in Jesus. If you confess with your mouth, he says, that Jesus is Lord, and believe in your heart God raised him from the dead, you'll be saved. So you're like, great. But what do you get if you're saved and you get to go to heaven and you get to know that all of your sins forever will be forgiven, which is awesome. And John says, and you get life. Do you know what that is? He said, life is like a person in chapter 4. He said, it's like a person who's really, really thirsty. And like, if you're really thirsty, it's your body's telling you there's something essential that you need that you don't have, and you really, really need it. And he said, life is when you believe in Jesus, you don't have that anymore. You don't have that thing that you feel like I'm missing something and I'll die if I don't get it. In fact, he said, life is like drinking out of a spring of water, but it's not that you have to go find it. It's inside of you. It's like every time you're thirsty, you just close your mouth and you just swallow it. Like, it's just like cold water just comes up in your mouth. You don't have to, you know, look for it or anything. He said, that's what it's like. It's like what you need, you have it. And he said, when you believe in Jesus and you have life, it's like a rivers of water. It's like you just have rivers of water coming out of your life. One time, well, actually in that same chapter, Jesus said to a woman, if you just knew the gift of God, like what he offers you and who's talking to you, if you just knew who was talking to you right now and what he would offer you, you would ask and he would give you living water, like life. And John is like, that's what it is. You have Jesus, and just having him and knowing him, it's life. And he wrote some letters that are at the end of the New Testament. And he says in the first chapter of his first one, he said, you know, this life that I'm talking about, I saw it. I watched it. I heard it. It's him. It's knowing Jesus. It gives you everything that you need to live and more. He, in the first chapter, John never talks about himself like in the first person, like, well, then I did this and then I did that in the Gospel of John. He always kind of talks about another disciple or the disciple Jesus loved, and he kind of means himself, but it's in the third person, kind of like Elmo does in a way, but Elmo loves this. He in chapter 1, he talks about the first time he met Jesus. And he said it was the 10th hour, which means it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And the reason that he said that is because he would never forget it. He's just like, if you could have just seen him, if you could have just known him, you would understand what it means when I say life is loving him and knowing him. And you're like, well, great, because I didn't get that opportunity, and now that ship has sailed. You know, I never did get to see Jesus, but you did. And John is like, yeah, Jesus thought about that. And he had a plan. And his plan was to gather some people, some special like friends of his, people who wanted him and who he wanted. And he turned them into the word is disciple. The word Christian is found 3 times in the New Testament, and disciple is found 264 times. And it means student, but it means more than a student. It means a person who, like if you have like your master, like kind of like a Jedi master, and you're like, I want to know everything he says. I want to memorize everything he says. I want to walk like him. I want to talk like him. I want to be with him all the time. And I just want to be like him. In Mark chapter 1, it just starts out like this. John, the same John who wrote the Gospel of John, and his brother James, they had a family fishing business, and they were with their dad, Zebedee. And Jesus walks by, and they were working on their fishing stuff, and Jesus said, just quit this and follow me. Awesome. And they did. And you're like, how do you get that to happen? I mean, what? How do you get somebody to just quit their job? When you read the Gospel of John, you realize actually they had already been knowing Jesus for almost a year at that point. And in fact, they had been kind of following him around kind of part-time. So that's when they did it full-time. But John says in chapter 1, the first time he ever met Jesus, he was a student of John the Baptist, and John the Baptist said, there he is, that's the one. And they started following him, just walking behind him. And Jesus stopped and said, what are you seeking? And they said, where are you staying? And he said, come and see. And they're like, really? I mean, you're like the Messiah of the world, like the most important person in the entire world, and you're saying, come hang out with me? Like, you have time for me? You know, John and his brother James both quit their dad's fishing business and follow Jesus. And eventually, so did their mother. Their dad's name was Zebedee, and his wife left him and followed Jesus. The only person in that family who didn't was Zebedee. And sometimes I wonder, maybe he was the problem. Like, he was just a pill. And John was like, man, in Jesus, I found someone who cares about me and who has time for me. And maybe he looked at Jesus as being like the dad he never had. I don't know, but he just had that time where he's like, I just want to be like him. And Jesus said, in fact, in the book of Acts, after Jesus had already gone into heaven, it said, and they were talking about him, and the authorities didn't like it, and they arrested him, arrested John and Peter and the other guys, and they said, and they realized these are guys that had been with Jesus, because you could just tell. He said one time, it's enough for a student to be like their master. And so, maybe they copied the way he talked, or I noticed something the other day. Like, I have a circle of friends, and I'm not really sure what they have in common, but they do have this in common, that when you ask them, hey, did you go to the thing last night? Instead of saying, yeah, I went, they'll say, I did. Did you go last night? I did. Or did you see that thing? I didn't. They didn't say, no, I didn't. They said, I didn't. And I realized the other day that I've started to do that. And I don't know why. And I don't know what that has to do with this. But, oh, like sometimes you just copy people, you know. And it says in Mark chapter 3, Jesus said, it said when he first called those guys to like be this special group of people, his disciples, he had two purposes. He called them that they might, two things, they might be with him and learn to act like him, and that he might send them out. And so that's the plan of people loving Jesus, becoming like him, and he go up to heaven, and then he sends them out into the world. And he said in chapter 17 of John and in chapter 20, he says, just as the Father sent me, I am sending them. In chapter 17, he includes us. And he says, as the Father sent me, I am sending you. And the way Jesus, sometimes I don't know if we think about it, but that Jesus was, the reason he came to our world is that he was sent here. It says in chapter 1 of the Gospel of John, the Word became flesh and he dwelt among us. And the word in, you know, originally the New Testament was written in the Greek language. And the word for dwelt is a word that has to do with tents. And it's the word for the, like the Greek version of the Old Testament for the tabernacle, which was a kind of a tent. And it basically means Jesus was God who came here and he put up his tent like with our tents. Like when Tina and I go camping, we usually have to take two cars, and I try to get there about 20 minutes late because if I do, she's already put the tent up. But no, just kidding. No, I'm just kidding about just kidding. But we're working on this tent, and you wind up talking to people, like the people that are in the campsite right next to you, and you talk to them and get to know them because they're camping, you're camping. You kind of are trying to get a little bit away from, you know, conversations and people. And, oh, man, like the time before last, there was this old couple, the retired couple. He talked my head off because I had to help with the tent. And he came over and told me all about how to do it and blah, blah, blah. And this additive that he wanted to sell me that you put it in your gasoline and it gives you 50% better mileage. And I'm like, really, dog, 50% better mileage? But you just wind up talking to people because you're camping and they're camping. And that's the way Jesus came into our world. And he camped here with us. And he moved into our life. And he moved into people's lives. And he just cared about them. And he laughed with them. And he went to their things. And he cried with them. And he just got into the world of people. And he said, as the Father has sent me that way, I am sending you that way. That he sends us into the world we live in, into people's lives, to know them and to care about them. And, you know, people who know Jesus, people who don't, just to know them and to love them and to listen to them and to the way he did and to be like him. People who are followers of Jesus, they haven't always gotten that. And they, right after the book of Acts ends, there was a movement where people would build colonies in the desert, like hermits and monasteries. And they would say, we have to get away from people. We have to get away from this world. If we want to be holy, we can't talk to them. We can't know them. We can't be with them. We can't have anything to do with them. They're so yucky, and we want to be holy, and we just have to get away from people. There was a guy that wanted to get so much away from people. His name was Simon Stylites, that he lived on a pole for 37 years. There was another guy named Anthony. He was an Egyptian who lived in the desert, and he didn't want to talk to anybody, and he didn't take a bath or change his clothes for 80 years. That'll do it. He died. Solved your problem there, friend. And he died at 105, and he smelled like he had died 20 years before that. But that's not what he wanted. Sometimes I think, like in churches today, especially in the United States, because it's an expensive way to do it, but they'll build, and not that there's anything wrong with it, but Christians will build, or churches will be great big buildings, and it'll become kind of like a world, and they'll do like big productions, and they'll invite people to come into their world. Like, we're going to do a big theatrical production, which Tina and I, when we were missionaries, when we left for the mission field, nobody did that. When we came home, churches were having big, elaborate productions at Christmas and Easter, and they were saying, come into our world. And we were like, wow, when did that happen? When did people start doing that? And they're great, and there's nothing wrong with it, except that possibly, like, if a person's on a stage and they're acting out a thing, I don't know them. And I don't know if they really mean that, and they don't know me. And I think that maybe another way, and the way I think that maybe Jesus meant was not to invite people into our world, but to go into their world and to know them and to love them and to care about them. The word world in John chapter 13 through chapter 17 is used 40 times. The word love, John is the gospel of love. And the word love is used in the Gospel of John from chapter 1 through chapter 12. It's used 6 times. From chapter 13 to chapter 17, it's used 32 times. So this was the time that He was getting ready to send them out. And everything was going to change. It was the Passover time. And on this night, it was kind of like weird. Because Passover was like it was like Christmas. They had songs they sang. They had dances they danced. There was family and food and, you know, different like carols. They sang different Passover carols. Like a carol actually is an old English Christmas song that has a dance to it. And so the Christmas carols, the real ones, are always kind of like da-dum-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. And the people would dance to it. And they would always sing Psalm 120 to 134 at Passover, and they would dance to it. But this night, it was more serious than that. It was like serious. And the guy said, "We haven't even talked about where we're having the Passover." And they said, "Master, where are we having our Passover? We haven't even talked about it." And Jesus said, "Go into the city, and you'll see a guy, and he'll have a water jar on his head. Don't talk to him. Just follow him." And they did. And it took them to a room, and it was already ready for them for Passover, but they didn't know these people. And they're like, "Who are these people?" It's like a covert operation. And Jesus, when they got together, he said, "Now it's the time for me to tell you, everything's going to change. You're not going to see me anymore like you used to. And you're not going to hear me. I'll be with you, but it's going to be in a different way. And I'm sending you out into a dangerous world. And I have some things that I need to tell you, secrets." And that's what John chapter 13 through chapter 17 is. And if a person isn't really doing that, like if their life isn't really about knowing people and caring for them and trying to do it the way Jesus, if a person's life is more about, "I'm trying to get away from people and I'm trying to like isolate myself," John chapter 13 through 17 won't really make any sense to you. In fact, a lot of the Gospel of John won't. A lot of the New Testament won't. But if we're trying to do that, like do what Jesus said, like be sent into people's lives and love people who need love, we need to know this stuff. And the first lesson, I think that Jesus was wind up being the first lesson, because another one came before that. But, you know, he was going to tell them about love. And you have to love, and that's how people know, as you're getting out there, that's how people know you're my disciples. And they'll learn about me by the way you love people. I was reading I've been reading this biography of this guy that I love, and a guy named Dwight L. Moody, who he preached to a million people in the world in the 1860s and 1870s and 80s, and he was just amazing. But he started out in Chicago. He was a shoe salesman making tons of money, but he started reaching out to kids in the northern part of Chicago on the north side of the Chicago River on Michigan Avenue. They called it the Sands, and there were these kids that were just, it was a horror, they called it little hell. And he started doing like really young life work, just reaching out to these kids. He rented an old tavern and started what some of us know, young life clubs, where he would gather these kids, these tough kids, with one parent that was a drug addict or an alcoholic, and he would laugh with them, sing with them, play games with them, and once every hour would stop for 5 minutes and tell them a story about Jesus. And it got up to 1,500 kids. And one time a reporter was just interviewing the kids, and it was talking to this little kid. And they had names like Smikes and Billy Blue Cannon, Madden the Butcher, Jackie Candles, and Butcher Lil Ray. One of the boys like named Lil Ray. I thought, it sounds like a rapper, just Lil Ray. And it turned out that this kid walked 3 miles a week to get to Moody's Sunday school class. And they asked him, "Why do you do it?" And he said, "Because they love a feller over there." But anyway, that was what Jesus was going to tell them about love, but he couldn't, because the guys had gotten into that room and they were having a fight and there was a lot of tension and they were fighting about which of them was the most important. And it's like, really, after 3 years, that's which one Jesus likes the best and all that. And they weren't letting him know, but he knew. And he's like, "I'm not going to talk about what I want to talk about until we deal with this." So he just stood up And he took his clothes off right in front of him. It's what it says. And he put a towel around his waist. In fact, in Greek, everything turns into the present tense. And John said, and so Jesus, knowing that God had, that he was come from God, he was going back to the God, going back to God, he's getting up. He's taking his clothes off. He's putting a towel around his waist. He's getting a bucket. He's filling it with water. And he started washing their feet. Because like they had walked through, you know, you walk through the streets, you walk through camel poo. And I mean, people, one scholar said, you know, people took their sewage and just threw it out the window. So when you walk down the street, you're just walking through everything. And Jesus just started washing their feet like a slave would do. And then when he was done, it says he put his clothes back on and he sat down. When it says Jesus took off his clothes and then it says he put his clothes back on, it's the same two Greek words in John chapter 10 where Jesus said, nobody takes my life from me. I have the power to lay it down and I have the power to take it back up. In thinking of, in talking about the way that he would die hours after this, it's almost like when he washed their feet, it's kind of like a movie trailer of what was going to come. And he said, do you understand what I've done? And if I've given you an example that, not that you have to die for anybody's sins or anything like that, but this is when I'm going to talk about love. This is what I mean. Finding people that need love, people that are lower than you, and just serving them and being a slave to them and taking care of them. I'm sending you into the world to do that. And you could imagine that they were thinking, people are mean. It's like people are yucky. They're stubborn. They're mean. This isn't going to be hard. If we're supposed to be like you, I don't know if I can. I don't know if I am like you. There it is. That's the first lesson. I think it was probably as awkward as all get out. It was silent when Jesus was washing their feet. And I'm sure they were thinking, I'm not exactly sure what's happening right now, but I think it has to do with the fact that I'm a doofus. And nobody said anything until he got to Peter. And Peter said, Lord, you're washing my feet? And Jesus said, you don't understand right now, but you will in just a little while. And Peter said, you will never wash my feet. You will never wash. In fact, in Greek, what he said is, he winds up sounding like Smeagol. He says, like, not, you will not wash my feet forever. You know, it's like, wow. And I think that Peter was basically saying, I do understand what you're doing. You've told us we need to serve people. You've said it a bunch of times. Now you're showing us this is awkward, it's embarrassing, and it's dumb. And you don't need to do this. And Jesus said, Peter, you don't understand. Because if I don't do this now and in the future, this is going to be the basis of our relationship. Because there's coming a moment when you're going to need me. You're going to need this water. You're going to need this towel. You're going to need my heart, because you're going to go out there and you're going to try to be like me. And in trying to be like me, you're going to discover that you're terrible at it. In a very few moments in a garden and by a campfire, when you should be praying, you're going to be sleeping. And when you should be chilling, you're going to be fighting. And when you should be witnessing, you're going to be cussing. I think the first lesson, the first secret that Jesus, that we have to know is this, that, you know, Jesus, he's, you know, we're supposed to be like loving people and taking care of them and moving into the lives of people that need love. The way he did, we're supposed to do that. And if a person doesn't do that, well, then they're going to be great. But if a person tries to do it, they're going to find out that, like, I'm going to try to love people. Like, even my mate, or and then even my kids, and then even, like, the people that know Jesus. And I'm going to try to love people who don't. And I'm going to find out stuff about myself that if I hadn't tried, I wouldn't have known. That sometimes I'm terrible at it. I'm a lot more selfish than I ever dreamed. I'm a lot more angry. I'm a lot more petty. I'm a lot more bitter. I'm a lot more lustful. I thought it was just going to be Jesus died for me, and now I live for him as my Lord. But even in trying to do that, I need for him to get off his throne, to come down here, to put a towel on. I thought I was going to serve him. I need him to serve me again. I thought that it was going to be like he calls me to be like him to them. And in trying to do that, I need him to be like him to me. And it's always going to be that way. I thought I was just going to go out there and serve him, and I can't. But when those moments come, and he has to come to me again, and he has to put a towel on, and he has to wash my feet, and I look into his eyes, I look down into his eyes, and he looks into my eyes, and I think, you're never going to give up on me. You're never going to quit on me, even though I'm an idiot. I can't tell you how much I love you. That's a person who has something to say. Now I got a message. Jesus loves idiots like me. And he'll never give up on you because he's never, ever given up on me. You know, D.L. Moody that was an awesome time that he had with all those kids. And then the Civil War came, and he was a chaplain in the Army, with the Union Army, and led 1 million dying people to Jesus. And then he got out, and he went back to Chicago, working with kids, working in the YWCA, which was exploding at that time. And he even started a church, and da-da-da, and he was doing all this stuff for Jesus. And he got to where he was tired, he was angry, all this stuff started coming out. And one time in a meeting where he was preaching in the YWCA, a guy nearby him started to heckle him. And D.L. Moody walked over to him and he pushed him down a flight of stairs in front of all the people. And he was like, oh my goodness. He apologized to the guy and apologized to all the people. It's done now, baby. What are you going to do, you know? And after Chicago burned down, and he went to New York and to raise money to rebuild Chicago. And he was walking, and he said, this is the way I felt. I was crying all the time. He said, I thought I was going to serve God. He was showing me myself. I found out I was ambitious. I didn't know that. I thought I was preaching for Christ. I was preaching for my own ambition. I found everything in my heart that ought not to be there. I was a miserable person. And he was walking down Wall Street, and he just asked Jesus, tell me that you love me. I need to know you still love me because I'm terrible. And he said, all of a sudden, the Holy Spirit just told him in his heart, I still love you, Dwight. I'm never going to give up on you. And I know you're seeing things that I've always known. But I love you. And he said it became so overwhelming that he had to go to a friend's house and ask him if he had a room that he could use. And he just got on his face and he started to cry. He said, what a day. I can't describe it. I seldom refer to it because it was an experience too sacred to name. But God told me that he loved me still. And I experienced his love. And it was so much I had to ask God to quit. Because I thought I was going to die. But he didn't. And he had a message. And he shared it all over the world. Father, I do ask you, like, maybe there's somebody and they're trying to do good stuff for you, and maybe they're here this morning. They are trying to love difficult people, and maybe they're kids, or maybe they're just somebody they're trying to reach out to, and they're discouraged, and they feel like a slug or a toad or something. And I do ask you to help them feel what is absolutely true. You love them. You love them. It's that you love watching it. You love watching them fail, trying to do something hard. They're precious to you. And I ask you that they could look into your eyes and they could feel the water on their feet and they could feel your hands washing them and maybe even kissing them. And they could look into your eyes and they would know you love them. You love them. You love them. You're never going to quit on us. And I ask you for those who are protecting their privacy and who want to live a private life. They don't want people in it, and they don't want to get into anybody else's life. I ask you to call them into the game and give them someone they have to love, but they can't even walk around, so that they can know what it feels like to have their feet washed. How exquisitely embarrassing and awesome. In Jesus' name.
For more information about Christ Community Church in Oak Ridge, including staff blogs, ministries we love and support, or just to connect with us, you can find us on the web at c3oakridge.org.